Blog Talk Radio.
Peace and blessings, brothers and sisters. This is V, the preacher. Welcome to Blueprint for Life. Earlier this week, I wanted to do about a five-part series. And if you go to YouTube and go to V, the preacher, you'll see I did an expose of a documentary by the William Branham Historical Research Group. They've been exposing the false cultic practices of healing revivals all the way back to the early 1900s, throughout the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s, primarily focusing on William Branham, who was a charlatan who came and said that he was Elijah in the flesh and spawned a lot of these ministries. Talked about the Azusa Street Revival, talked about the Zion with Dowie in New York revivals, and the falsehoods about the healings, the association, the close-knit association with many of these ministries with the Ku Klux Klan, and how they did not allow a lot of blacks to participate, which is why you had the separations in different religions, how the Assemblies of God was rooted in racism. Ku Klux Klan actually got a hold of Bosworth, F.F. Bosworth, and told him not to ever again do an interracial revival again. That's how he ended up starting the Assemblies of God. He was beaten down by the KKK. Then we also find out that that early cult of charismatic movement of Pentecostalism and UPC and all of them, that they confessed British Israelism. They said they were parts of the lost 10 tribes of Israel. And that narrative mysteriously changed right before the State of Israel was implemented in 48. They stopped teaching that. They were against it somewhere around the late 1930s, I believe 1938 or maybe 1940. Then 8 years later, you have the State of Israel coming in, and then you have Christian replacement theology that also came about at that time. We start to find out the early inspirings of these people who we revered as church gospel fathers. When you talk about Charles Parham, William Seymour, this whole thing with the tongues, the so-called unknown tongues, which was gibberish. I've done a lesson on that. The tongues that were given on the day of Pentecost were languages that people spoke from other countries that they might be able to understand the gospel that was being preached, and that was the interpretation. But that's for another lesson, another time. This is a great channel these guys have put together. I'm glad I discovered them, because we find out Jim Jones also helped to birth people like Jim Jones. That was one of his mentees. When William Branham was on the way out, Jim Jones salvaged his ministry, and we know what that led to. The Latter Rain revival with the Halton brothers, which my father and some of the preachers from the churches that I was a part of had direct contact with one of the Halton brothers. There was Jim Halton and there was Ernest Halton, and this came out of Canada. And that was also something William Branham played a key role in. We find out that the photo halo around his head was a lie. It was a light far off in the distance, and it was Photoshop before Photoshop existed. And nevertheless, just the unraveling of so many different things, the entertainment aspect, because there was no film and TV when a lot of this started with these revivals. So people came out in droves to be entertained. And sure enough, they were entertained to the point where Harry Houdini would show up to debunk all the so-called revivals and levitation and things that they were doing to mesmerize people. It was kind of akin to Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Circus back then in the day, and it kind of spent right over into the Black Christian Church today, which is what inspired me to also put it out there, because people that don't want to let go of the Christian Church don't even understand the roots and foundation of Christianity. Even before this time of the 1900s, going back to Portugal, how our people who were Israelites were forced to convert to Christianity and be baptized, or else they were sent to the island of Saint Tome at the bottom of Africa and became slaves, not indentured servants like all you other countries claim to have been slaves. No, you were indentured servants. They were forced into slavery and then shortly thereafter forced into the ships and brought to other shores in the 1600s. And then forced to convert to Christianity when they got to the places of slave trade in the islands in Americas, South America, wherever it may have been, even in the other islands during the sub-Saharan slave trade. So these were not our original religions. And then you see all the buffoonery that takes place in the Christian church around glossolalia and Shekinah glory and the things that people implemented, and this laughing revivals and being slayed in the spirit, different things like that. Well, today these guys came out from the William Branham Research Institute with a video talking about the prosperity gospel, which was really recent. I think that's a part of the late 90s, early 2000s. So I'm going to play this and I'll give commentary along the way. John Collins is one of the author and founders, and Charles Paisley, they're historians. Let's see if we can fast forward this.
William Brent. So like I say, I'm extremely excited about today's show.
Yeah, I am too. You know, in our last couple episodes, we've been talking about William Branham's divine healing beliefs and his positive confession beliefs. And in this episode, we want to talk about the Voice of Healing organization and how William Branham interacted with the broader healing revival movement and how these ideas he held were spread and popularized in the late 1940s and into the 50s. And, you know, without a doubt, William Branham was the most important figure in that healing revival movement. And that religious movement of the healing revivals and the Latter Rain movement that started in the late 1940s is one of the most significant religious movements in the history of the United States. Those events are what kicked off the second wave of Pentecostalism. It ended up impacting millions of people globally. But, you know, really this period, honestly, it's very poorly studied, John.
Right.
There's only a few good books or resources that are out there on the topic. There's really not a whole lot of good research that's been done on this at all, but we have tons of source material here, and I just got a whole lot of it that I've collected over the years, especially once I started investigating into the, you know, the sources of our beliefs and the message. And I would also recommend, you know, if there's any listeners out there that want to look into this stuff themselves, I would also recommend the Oral Roberts University in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to anyone who wants to research the healing revival period. They have a mountain of original documents out there in their library covering the Latter Rain, the healing revivals, and all of the healing evangelists and publications and magazines just from those years, all kinds of stuff. And if you're interested in studying the healing revivals and the Latter Rain, their library is a really great resource. And I've been there multiple times to pull documents on things and fill in some of the holes in my own collection. And of all the places I've been to research, they probably have the best tools and resources for researching these revivals that I've seen. And of course, John, your website is got a mountain of information on it too. So, but yeah, that's what we're going to talk about today. Gordon Lindsay, the Voice of Healing, and how those things came together.
Yeah. And you mentioned Oral Roberts, and a lot of people aren't aware that Oral Roberts was in the message, you know, the message cult following of William Branham back when it was called the Latter Rain message. And before it turned into the, you know, the cult of personality, what it became later, you know, in later versions of William Branham's stage persona, he's speaking very strongly against Oral Roberts and Billy Graham. They're his chief competitors, basically. But in the early years, it wasn't that way. William Branham was trying very hard to get connected to Billy Graham, and even worked through Matson Bose to stage a meeting between the men. And Billy Graham, you know, by that point, he was so
This is the era where you have Esau running rampant with the Pentecostal movement, suppressing the people that the book is about and having them to follow them. And we looked up to them and began to worship them as being gods, because they were at the behest, the forefront of all these meetings. The full gospel businessmen, Oral Roberts, Shambach, A.A. Allen, tent revivals, and we mocked and we mimicked and we followed suit. And it was just a lot of showmanship. Some good came out of it. Some people were really transformed, changed, and touched. I came through it and ended up coming into the truth. But this was the mockery of Esau playing around with our book and our call.
He really didn't need William Branham, moved on. But Oral Roberts, in his early days, he was connected to this. He was in this. And I recommend anybody who is just curious about the names that were connected to this, go on our website and in the menu, go down to the Voice of Healing. You can look through these magazines and you'll see hundreds, if not thousands, of men who were involved with William Branham's latter rain message at the point of time in which it was, you know, the Voice of Healing revival and the latter rain movement merged for a period of time. Then they split. But they were cross-pollinated by that point. And you'll see in these magazines, you'll find Latter Rain guys. You'll find men who separated from Latter Rain, but they're all still very, very connected.
Right. And, you know, I think as time goes on, we're going to do some more episodes on how all of these things break up and split out. But Latter Rain, the Latter Rain side of stuff, as time goes on, really Joseph Mazzanbose and the Herald of Faith kind of represents the mainstream of Latter Rain. But what Joseph Mazzanbose and Herald of Faith are to the Latter Rain as it diverges, Gordon Lindsay and Voice of Healing are to the mainstream of the Healing Revival. And I think Gordon Lindsay and the Voice of Healing are really the keys to understanding how the Healing Revivals worked at kind of an organizational level. And I want to talk about that just a little bit, about how that Voice of Healing organization was created. And, you know, as I look over the history of how, you know, all this got going, it seems pretty obvious to me that the first priority when they started to make the Voice of Healing magazine in 1948, that first priority was really to try and counter all of the negative press and negative publicity that William Branham was getting in the newspapers. Because he was getting almost universally bad press,
right?
The truth be told, as you come into the late 40s. And the Voice of Healing really started out as a publicity tool for the Branham campaigns. And they did that because, like I said, the newspapers were just giving them lots of bad press. And the Voice of Healing magazine was a way they could start to make their own press and to control the narrative about what was happening in the Healing Revivals. And honestly, it was, in that respect, John, it was very successful, wasn't it? I mean,
yeah.
For most people who look back at the Healing Revivals, I mean, nobody remembers the newspaper articles when Carol Ruth Strubler died, right? Nobody remembers the article that Donnie Morton died. Nobody remembers any of the bad press. But everyone remembers all of the healing stories told in the Voice of Healing. So in that way, it was very successful. And for people like us in the message, really the only lens through which we saw or understood the Healing Revivals was the window that Voice of Healing gave us. We just heard and saw what they wanted us to hear and see about it. And really nobody remembers that mountain of newspaper articles and negative press that a lot of it's been dug up and is on your website now.
Yeah. And, you know, there's a lot of people that are unaware that the negative press took a severe toll on William Branham's mental health. It's something that the elites in William Branham's cult of personality are aware, but the vast majority of the rank-and-file members of the cult of personality have no idea that William Branham had a complete mental breakdown, and it came on the heels of all of the bad publicity that happened in 1948, and you can easily piece this together without taking our word for it. Just take a look through the Voice of Healing magazine. You'll see the first issue is clearly advertising William Branham and his ministry, his meetings. And, you know, this goes out and then all this bad publicity happens and William Branham just disappears. Nobody knows where he is. And I just dug it up this morning to try to remember when it was, but It was the January 1949 issue of The Voice of Healing. There's an article entitled, Branham is Back. So 1948, he launches Voice of Healing to advertise himself. The bad press happens. He disappears, and at that point, Gordon Lindsay basically took control of his magazine. And there was a minister, I believe it was William Freeman was the name. He became basically William Branham's replacement in 1948. Then when William Branham came back, Branham was the chief editor. But after his mental breakdown, Gordon Lindsay becomes the chief editor. And William Branham and William Freeman become the, you know, the supplemental editors of this publication. And, you know, it's significant if you think about a cult that was created off of the heels of somebody losing their mind, but that's actually what happened here. And there's just so much information that you can dig up to, you know, to support this, but the cult elites have known this for years.
Right, and I think that's a real good summary. And Gordon Lindsay, you know, I think understanding Gordon Lindsay, just as you mentioned, he ends up running this thing before too long after it gets started. But Gordon Lindsay is someone who's really important to understand in all of this. And I know somewhere down the road we probably should do a full episode just on kind of Gordon Lindsay and his backstory. But just kind of a brief summary of Gordon Lindsay for this episode is he had been born in Zion, Illinois, into the Dowie cult. His family, like John Lake had been working in Zion with Dowie too. And after Dowie died, his family follows John Lake out of Dowie, out to Oregon, and then they're more or less followers of John Lake. And Gordon Lindsay's got a really high opinion of John Lake, and Lake was one of his key influences. And they're all Dowieites. They're all really steeped in British Israelism. They're all following Dowie's divine healing practices. And John Lake, he's at Azusa Street. I don't know that Gordon Lindsay was, but, you know, he had direct connections when all this stuff was happening with Azusa Street even and as a boy. And so Lindsay had lots of connections because Lake actually kind of got him his start in ministry. And Lindsay ended up with connections all over the Pentecostal movement as a result of John Lake. And so when he comes into contact with William Branham and kind of takes over as his publicist and campaign manager, he's very popular, very connected, and he's really integral in taking William Branham's fame to this peak level that it goes to starting in the late 40s. And in April 1948, that's when Ern Baxter and F.F. Bosworth have become part of William Branham's team. And they all start that Voice of Healing organization together. And, you know, a lot of people, they maybe make a mistake of thinking about Voice of Healing as just a magazine, but it is much, much more than just a magazine. The Voice of Healing was the main organizing force of the healing revival movement. And Gordon Lindsay, ultimately, he's really the brains behind it all. And it starts with that magazine. And initially, that first year, that magazine, like you said, it was aimed strictly at reporting William Branham's campaigns. And as you look at the different articles and stuff from the first year, it really was targeted mainly at William Branham to try and, you know, counter all of the bad press. And I think one very important thing, John, that you mentioned is at the very beginning of this thing, William Branham is the head of this organization. I mean, he is listed as publisher and, you know, more or less senior editor of this magazine as it begins. And he is the head of this thing as it starts out. And as you look through it, it's that way in all of the early editions of the magazine. But one interesting fact, too, just, and I think we've mentioned this, is about how this got its name, and I think I've got it here somewhere. When William Branham kicked off this magazine, there's an article in here about how he named the organization and the magazine. He called it Voice of Healing, and he talks about being inspired by certain Bible verses to name this Voice of Healing. But we actually found out not too long ago that he stole the name right. Voice of Healing from W.D. Kidson's magazine, because back when he was working with W.D. Kidson, he had been there had been articles being published in Kidson's magazine under a column named The Voice of Healing.
Yeah.
So William Branham actually stole the Voice of Healing name from W.D. Kidson for the magazine.
Yeah, and I found some newspaper advertisements predating the Voice of Healing publication, where William Branham is advertised heavily as America's Voice of Healing. And what's interesting about this, you know, William Branham, who claimed to be illiterate, have a, what was he said, seventh grade education. You can listen to his sermons, and he's pretending to talk this Kentucky English in some sermons. Other sermons, he's not. And, you know.
And so you have to understand that these people that they're in reference to are icons that develop cult followings. And you primarily have Caucasian Pentecostals that see the change in the racial structure and tension of the United States and taking advantage of it. You have to understand British Israelism, once again, is them proclaiming to be descendants of the children of Israel. And they got away from that, but that started off in the 1900s at the same time they were associated with the Ku Klux Klan. So it was very racist as they were suppressing the indigenous people and the black people, the true Israelites of America. And we were coming up under the wings of this cult leadership. And I know people till this day that still worship this man and his books as if he were Elijah, or if he had something like really special. And it led to all of these various different cults, this Word of Faith movement, this prosperity gospel, this healing revival. They had people follow, just like they did Benny Hinn, the people who claimed to be healed. Because you have to understand, Word of Faith, prior to that, there was a term which escapes me right now, that if you were healed, you were to confess it and believe it, and not speak any word out of your mouth contrary to your healing, because you needed to claim it verbally at all times. This caused a lot of people to be taken advantage of as well. They found out that 3 weeks later, a lot of people that claimed to be healed in these tent healing revivals were found dead. They were dead, came up dead, and were never healed. A lot of charlatans, a lot of people hurt behind this. I'm going to fast forward a little bit. Let's see.
Propaganda. And it right there on the front page of the issue, it says that this publication, The Voice of Healing, will supersede all previous arrangements. And he names the committee as and you've got the Jack Moore connection. And during this mental health breakdown, Oral Roberts would not have come into the scene. His entire ministry would likely never have existed in the way that it does today, because this is what literally made him famous. But not just him. So whenever he became the national icon that he became, all of these other ministers saw what this magazine could do, and it empowered Gordon Lindsay beyond what his wildest dreams could have ever pictured.
This was about money, people.
So
that's why they started the Full Gospel Businessmen's Association and had the Kardashians promoting them. This was about money.
Branham, who wanted to be at the top, Gordon Lindsay basically took a step above him at that point. And they had realized by this time the winning combination of creating a stage act. And if you just go to my website, you know, william-branham.org, pull up Voice of Healing, thumb through any issue, you're going to find these guys who, I was visited by an angel, God gave me a commission, God
right.
spoke to me in this vision,
right.
I had this prophecy. They're all doing exactly what William Branham did. They're literally clones of William Branham.
And you see this a lot with cult behavior. They always say, I saw a light came into my room. Satan causes his angels to appear as ministers of light and bring false information. This happened with Elijah Muhammad, Malcolm X. Malcolm X was in a jail cell. All these cults will tell you that a light came in my room and it told me this or that. And this is the same thing that happened with William Branham or Roberts. So all this cultic behavior, they're claiming that some manifestation of something came and spoke to them. Let's continue.
had Gordon Lindsay, who's, you know, I'm imagining this. There's no way to know because we weren't there, but you've got Gordon Lindsay who sees this power and uses it, and likely he's saying, look, if you come be a part of this movement, I can make you famous. I can bring you crowds. I've got a magazine where we've got 40,000 people sending us their names and their addresses. Think of the discernment. Many of these people are writing us letters, and, you know, it's even mentioned they have boxes of testimonies. These are people who are giving their names, their addresses, and their diseases. And you find that a large percentage of the ministers who are involved with this thing are doing these, all of them are doing these healing acts, but many of them are doing discernment. And they've literally got this engine created that can make a minute. I'm not a minister. I never, ever wanted to be, but I could, you know, become part of this, and then suddenly I could claim an angel and claim discernment. You know, anybody can do it if you've got this engine.
Right, because, see, Oral Roberts had came to William Branham's meetings for the first time in earlier in 1948, and here's a photo of Oral Roberts standing by William Branham at one of his revivals.
Let me say that again. These people were claiming to have discernment, and they had people coming to the revivals, healing revivals, filling out cards. And this information was given to these people who would act as if they were discerning their sicknesses, or where they lived, or what their name was. This was some serious buffoonery.
And at this point, William, or Oral Roberts, was still just, small potatoes. And what happens is that after Oral Roberts leaves that meeting with William Branham, that is when Oral Roberts suddenly gets the sign in his hand, and that Oral Roberts suddenly starts performing all of the same types of things that William Branham was doing. It happens right after he comes to William Branham's meetings and witnesses William Branham doing all of it, right? And so, of course, the way we would look at it, well, he was so inspired that the Spirit of God gave him the same gifts, and he had so much faith that he went out and did the same thing, and maybe. Or maybe he reverse engineered whatever William Branham was doing, or he got friendly with William Branham and he, you know, got in on the secrets of how it all works, right? You don't know, right, exactly how it happened, but he comes, he meets William Branham, and he goes out and he starts doing the exact same kind of things.
Right.
And that's why he is kind of set up. When William Branham goes off the scene, Gordon Lindsay goes to the next guy that's managed to start doing the exact same stuff, right? And he gets publicized. And so, you know, like you said, Gordon Lindsay really becomes very important after this. After William Branham's mental breakdown in 1948, that opened that space up for Gordon Lindsay to start publicizing other evangelists. And this is what takes the Voice of Healing organization to the next level. And it's really, really big when he does this. And what happens here is this is when they form the Voice of Healing Fellowship, right?
Right.
So the Voice of Healing Fellowship is when it really starts to become a whole lot more than a magazine. And by 1949, that Voice of Healing Fellowship becomes the framework through which the healing revivals just really take off and are organized. By the time you get into those years, I mean, S.F. Bosworth is one of them, T.L. Osborne, Kenneth Hagin, A.A. Allen, Oral Roberts, Jack Cove, Raymond T. Ritchie, Velmer Gardner, Tommy Hicks, Ern Baxter, Franklin Hall, right? I mean, minister after minister after minister, popular evangelists is just more or less coming out of the woodwork and are coming and being part of this Voice of Healing Fellowship. And as they do all of this, they start to publish things like, I think I had a picture of it here on this front page. They put out the Inner Evangelical Policy of the Branham Campaign. And this policy starts to define what these men will preach, what they'll do, what they won't do. So they almost start to develop like their own statement of faith.
Yeah.
They have their own.
These guys were like
their own statement.
Rock stars. I want you to understand. Hold on, let me pause this.
Will preach, what they'll do, what they won't do. So they almost start to develop like their own
bylaws. These guys were like rock stars. And A.A. Allen was found dead at the Jack Parr Hotel here in San Francisco on Van Ness Street.
And he would do these tent meetings all over the world that would be packed out, and mostly with our people, the true Hebrew Israelites that this world calls African Americans, because he had a tremendous singer by the name of Gene Martin and Ruth Davis, and they would stir up the crowd. This stuff was like rock star status. And our people who were Israelites just wanted to believe, because we had been taught white supremacy through white supremacists to worship a white God. So we thought we were getting closer to something that resonated within us naturally, but had been stolen from us, and we were trying to adapt to that. But let's listen some more. I just want you to get this history, because so many things in this hour are being exposed. These people were saying they were the children of Israel. You have to remember that. And then they got rid of that narrative and started preaching Christian replacement theology. So our people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Come up out of these Christian churches, people.
Faith. Yeah. They have their own, start to put together their own organizational structure of ministers that are kind of associated and endorsed by the group. And as this happens, all of these people coming together are looking towards William Branham really as the senior leading figure in all of this. And Gordon Lindsay is the organizing brains behind the whole thing. And they also start, I think I've got another, I got another one here of one thing. So as they're doing all this, they put together almost like a traveling seminary.
Yeah.
And they're training deliverance preachers as they go. They put advertisements like this in. So they start training people to be deliverance preachers. And you can pay the tuition. You can go to their week-long course that they have. They have textbooks. They have course materials. I mean, this thing is a full-on little mini seminary for being a deliverance preacher.
Yeah.
And as they travel around, they're training a whole generation of preachers with William Branham's, F.F. Bosworth's deliverance, healing, positive faith, word of faith type beliefs, to go out and spread these ideas to the world.
Yeah. What's really interesting is a lot of the men involved with it were either Pentecostal or considered themselves to be non-denominational leading up to this. And especially after, you know, when Latter Rain hit and caused the big split in Pentecostalism, a lot of ministers actually left Pentecostal and they became non-denominational. Well, then whenever this Voice of Healing movement started, they started using the term interdenominational, which means basically your denomination can join with my denomination, can join with this other, and we're going to have unity. It's basically setting up for a big failure, but more to the point, all of the things that these ministers held as significant elements of their faith. In other words, if you're going to be part of my particular denomination, you must believe X, Y, and Z. Well, this Voice of Healing Fellowship made the roadmap where, no, you can't emphasize X, Y, and Z because that is in disagreement with this other member in the fellowship. So you have to find unity and you have to find common ground. And so these men were taking things that they considered to be fundamental to the Christian faith, suppressing them, and they were identifying other means to find unity among themselves.
The Pentecostals are talking about are those that were part of the Church of God in Christ, those that came out of Azusa that followed William Seymour because he was black. And you have what's going on with them making rules and having seminaries, the same thing that happened back in the early 386 ADs with Constantine and then the Nicene Council. Esau, stealing, conversos, making the rules, deciding what books to read, how things should be done, because the originals had died off. This is the stuff that has had a tremendous influence on us that we have come out of and that many of our people are still a part of. And then let's interlace that with Freemasonry. What a conundrum.
And what they're doing essentially is they're creating a new denomination of Christianity that is completely dumbed down. And you know, there were a lot of men who joined into this thing, and they were starting to get offended because there were ministers who literally preached against their sect or their faith or denomination, and yet they couldn't preach against, you know, the other way, because this thing was, they were giving education books and training sessions on how to get along with the people who are polar opposite from you in our new denomination of faith.
You know, in the message, right, this knowledge would make your head explode. So you're telling me that William Branham was the head of an organization that had a traveling seminary training preachers and organizational, had a statement of faith called, you know, this and that. That would blow your mind, right?
Yeah.
But that really is the truth. They don't, they have, instead of a statement of faith, they have a policy of doctrine, right?
Right.
Instead of a seminary, they have a deliverance minister training school. Okay, everything that constituted the denomination, they built it. They just gave different names from kind of traditional stuff, and William Branham is right there at the peak leadership role in this thing. And what they're doing here is they are building a huge network of preachers and ministers being taught all these things, and what they're doing is going to influence an entire generation of Pentecostals and beyond. And,
yeah,
you know, basically in these few years of time, William Branham becomes the most influential Pentecostal preacher in the world. Okay. In these years, William Branham is the most influential Pentecostal preacher in the world. And all the other major Pentecostal preachers that are famous, you know, in the second tier and third tier are part of his Voice of Healing Fellowship, right? These guys are the most popular Pentecostal preachers in the world. And it's really hard to overstate how influential and important William Branham was back in these years. But I think, again, one way maybe to demonstrate how famous William Branham was, I mean, take a look at this. This is the 50th anniversary celebration of Azusa Street in Los Angeles, held at the Angelus Temple, okay? William Branham is the keynote speaker at the 50th anniversary of Azusa Street, and every other minister who's anybody in Pentecostalism is at this thing, and they're preaching after William Branham's keynote address through this week. William Branham is, I mean, unquestionably, and there's a lot of people who don't like this fact because of what happened with William Branham in later years. William.
And then who takes the baton for the Azusa Street revivals after that? Well, I know we tried to get this thing going in San Francisco when I was a kid. I saw it happen. But then it was Carlton Pearson who came from under Oral Roberts who took the baton from Branham. You all see this? And then you had Carlton Pearson and then that led to Full Gospel Baptists, where you had the guys with the purple shirts. And all these guys were in fraternities and Masons. This is some good history.
Branham was the most influential Pentecostal preacher in the world in these years. And that is the truth. And if you read these biographies, all of it, it really is true. And he was not the most influential for a day or two. He was this way for nearly a decade. Nearly a decade he was in this position.
I think the reason it's so difficult for historians who were never involved with this or know this history to start to piece this together, the later versions of William Branham's stage persona even preached sermons entitled Why I Am Against Organized Religion, right? The mold that he created for his later stage persona, which is the one that would be remembered throughout history, is completely different than the version of William Branham that we have during this time. He is literally creating an organized religion. He's a bishop in Roy Davis's sect. And again, we're going to get into Davis in later episodes, but at this period of time, Davis is kind of out of the picture. He's just went to prison. He's off building the Klan, and likely he's silently working with Branham, but Branham himself, this is all going to his head. Now, he could be the Pope instead of the bishop, right? So he's creating this new world that really doesn't have Davis in it. And, this will play out into some future episodes, but he's creating an organized religion And it's the exact thing that he taught against in the later years. And I don't know about your sect or the message, but in my sect, we were strongly against seminaries and training and teaching. You know, it was supposed to be given by God through the prophet, and the ministers were supposed to be parrots of the prophet, basically. What we're having here is the polar opposite of what I would even consider the message, and this was the message at that time.
Right. You know, what we do in the message, right, is we blame Gordon Lindsay for all of this.
Right.
We say, look, Gordon Lindsay did all of this stuff against the prophet's wishes, and but that's not true. Okay, so William Branham is wholeheartedly supporting this and going along with it and reaping all the benefits of it. It's not until time goes on and he has his falling out with Gordon Lindsay that he decides that all of this was terrible, right?
Yeah.
And so that's, we in the message, we did think all of this was terrible, but William Branham didn't think all this was terrible at the time. He's the one teaching at this school. I mean, when you read these articles, all right, he's one of the seminarians, okay?
How can something be terrible when so much money is flowing through it?
I know, right? I mean, isn't all the money proof that God loves it, right? Like,
just like your Bible academies today with these camps, or you having to go to their schools to be indoctrinated. The Holy Spirit is our teacher, which divinely inspires, calls, and confirms. This is a work of business. And you see people trying to constantly get money. Let me say, I give a shout out to an individualite like myself, Truth Unedited. Just brings truth, books, PDFs for free, doesn't charge money, and does a tremendous breakdown out of his own pocket and not associating with any camps, and came into the knowledge of the truth. Don't let nobody condemn you, calling you an individualite like that's a bad thing, because so was John the Baptist. So were many of the apostles. God has a way of, Most High Yah has a way of getting you by yourself to get you to come to yourself. Trust me, the closer you get to him, the more you want to be individual. I digress. They're talking about the money piece.
So this is, we're going towards the prosperity gospel now, if you can hear that.
Yeah. Speaking of which, interesting side note that I've got to inject, because this just, it blew my mind. My mind is blown. We were talking about, you know, the prosperity gospel of today and all these ministers who say, God will give me an airplane. Just preach and just pray and believe and send me your money. God will give me an airplane. We used to laugh at that kind of thing because William Branham would never do this, right? According to the way we were taught. Yet we knew that William Branham told a guy to buy him an airplane.
Yeah,
you know, cognitive
right.
dissonance. I knew this. I knew that William Branham told somebody to buy him an airplane. But this was the early formation of the prosperity gospel.
Right, and we have this way in the message of doing such – so the same thing. In our sect of the message, we knew that William Branham told the Mosley brothers to buy him an airplane, right?
Yeah.
And the Mosley brothers kept that airplane around long after he died. But what we did is, instead of blaming William Branham for telling them to buy him an airplane, we blame the Mosley brothers, right? Oh, the Mosley brothers, they're crazy. They're out of their mind buying the prophet an airplane, you know, Brian William Branham. We would make fun of the Mosley brothers, but they just bought an airplane because William Branham asked him to.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just like this, where you blame Gordon Lindsay for doing all of this stuff. He was just doing it to help, you know, for William Branham. I mean, William Branham was there going along supporting and benefiting from all of this stuff. And these men are taking these beliefs far and wide. And here is just, you know, one page, and there are multiples of pages of all of the revivals that they're having globally. And this is just from the space of 2 or 3 weeks. These people are having dozens and dozens of revivals every single month globally. Like here they mark on a map all the countries of the world where they're having revivals that month. Like these beliefs, these things they're doing are globally, right? If you look at this, they're in Canada, they're in the U.S., they're in Mexico, they're in Cuba, they're in Jamaica, South America, Argentina, Chile, Australia, Indonesia, the Philippines, Japan, India, Pakistan, South Africa, Kenya, Egypt, Ireland, Germany, Sweden, I mean, and that's just the ones I'm making off the top of my head. On and on it goes. Finland, and they are global with this stuff. They are taking these beliefs to the whole world, right? And it's not just, you know, that they're going out and people are having healed and getting benefits and things like that, but they're taking a set of doctrines that had not been believed on in these groups or areas before. And specifically, we'll talk about a little bit as we come down, but there is a whole new set of beliefs that these guys are spreading that they've learned through all of these seminaries that William Branham and Gordon Lindsay have created, and they're taking these practices out to the world. And it really is something. And what happens here, some of these men in this fellowship, they get so big, they get so popular, that they totally outgrow the need for denominations. And William Branham is one of the men in that category. A. Allen's another. Oral Roberts is another. They're so big, they've gained so much popularity. They have such a great amount of access to the people. They can fundraise directly from the people. They don't have to rely on the denominations for any sort of financial support anymore. And that makes a really big shift within Pentecostalism as a whole. And this starts the era of the mega preachers and the mega churches, right? It starts with setting off the era when you get a really popular preacher builds a really massive church, and they're pretty well independent from any other church body. And this sets all of that in motion, right?
Yeah, it did. You know, somewhere, I don't have it in front of me, but this thing.
This is what we see today, which is T.D. Jakes, the Creflo Dollars, some of the other people up in, I can't call the names, in the Northeast. And you know the mega churches. You know every one of them. And they become individualized that are raising money. And it's just perpetuating itself. Even with Jennings, all of them. This all stems from right here.
So big. I mean, just look at the map. William Branham is the pope of this thing. He's creating basically, you've got the Catholic Church who's worldwide, and he's the pope of the anti-Catholic Church worldwide. It became so big that it even had somewhat of its own banking system. The Voice of Healing magazine, towards the later years, was actually selling annuities for these ministers who joined in.
Yeah, and they're a very loose fellowship, right? Like, there's not a... It's not terribly command and control, but it's William Branham is in the senior position, and he has influenced the beliefs of all of these men.
Yeah.
And, you know, because of what happened with William Branham in the later years of his life, the truth is most people who survive, you know, in their ministries into the 60s and 70s, after William Branham's fall from grace, they really try to downplay how important William Branham was, right? But William Branham was by far one of the most influential figures in Pentecostalism in the 1950s. And the healing revivals are what got him to that level, right? And, you know, if that's the exact same thing that lets William Branham be the keynote speaker at the 50th anniversary of the Azusa Street revivals, right? And here's the thing. At the exact same time that William Branham is keynote speaker at the Azusa Street revivals, look at some of the advertisements that are running in Voice of Healing. International Christian Fellowship Convention. This is a Voice of Healing endorsed convention held at the Cable Tabernacle. Postpastor, the Reverend James Jones, right?
Jim Jones.
At the exact same time that William Branham is in this position, him and his organization are supporting Jim Jones, right? These are the things that are going on the fringes of this movement.
There you go. Branham supported the upbringing and foundation of Jim Jones coming out of Indiana, 1957, before he landed in San Francisco. You heard these people just say that William Branham was like the pope of Pentecostalism in the Christian churches. Check the sources, people. Not only do we want to come up out of Christianity, you want to come up out the black church that's still espousing these beliefs that were created by these Caucasoids early on, misinterpreting the scriptures in the Bible. This is
you know, I'm spending time in my life to just process a lot of this because I went through this stuff. I was a part of it. I can't question the Most High. He has a process because I know what I did learn, which I'm utilizing in my life at this present time, being awakened into the knowledge of the truth of keeping the statutes, laws, and commandments and coming back to the original way that the Creator wanted us to live under the covenant and coming out of the world, not keeping its holidays, but now keeping the holy days of Leviticus 23 and changing my dietary laws and just applying the scripture for real and coming out of religion that these people taught. It's processing a lot, and I can't even question it. Who can question the mind of Yah? Let me continue.
Again, nobody owns, nobody claims responsibility for, right? But Jim Jones and figures like that are creeping in and circulating in this movement at this time.
Yeah. And there's an implosion that happens in a few years later, and Jones becomes a more significant figure that we'll be getting into. But this was attracting all kinds of people, some of them good, some of them bad. And if you really think about what happened in their ministries, this engine of creating ministries basically was responsible for the big names that we have in American history and American Christianity. Without this thing, they would not have existed in the way that they exist today.
Right. And keep in mind, William Branham is certainly the most responsible, perhaps, for like creating Jim Jones' ministry. But Jim Jones was on the platform with Oral Roberts.
Yeah.
Jim Jones was on the platform with A.A. Allen. Jim Jones was there with all of these people, you know, and just like they all want to forget William Branham, they definitely want to forget Jim Jones, right?
Absolutely.
But this stuff is all happening together at the same pod at the same time. And we'll talk a lot about Jim Jones in some more episodes. But, you know, I know, John, I think that because of the popular appeal, right, of all of this, you know, the broader healing revival, it kind of had a more different flavor than the latter rain side of things, right? The healing revival had a much smaller emphasis on the fivefold ministry, a much smaller emphasis on end time teachings, and overall a much smaller emphasis on any sort of doctrines, right? Like those policy statements that they made to kind of control what the preachers could preach, it really focused them and the movement overall on healings, miracles, signs, wonders, the gifts of the Spirit, right? The main thrust of the healing revival is different than the main thrust of latter rain. The main thrust of the healing revival is miracles, wonders, lights, camera, action, right? The evangelists of the healing revival are very interested in broad appeal and maintaining broad popular appeal, right? And because popular appeal is so important to them, the healing evangelists as a whole, they end up a lot less cultic than the people on the latter rain side of things.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you think about that, that makes sense because the healing evangelists, they generally didn't develop the same authoritarian structures that or even the behavioral controls that were developed on the latter rain side of things. And although they're mixing here, what happens is that gradually the latter rain side of things, they start to take a low view of these healing evangelists, right? The latter rain starts to accuse the healing evangelists and the people kind of circling and coming into orbit of the healing evangelists. They start saying they don't have any standards. They don't have any principles. They just follow the money. They just care about numbers.
Yeah.
And that is kind of becomes the way that the latter rain side of things starts to look at the healing revival focus side of things. And I think in some extent, maybe the latter rain is true. I think maybe they were interested in numbers and money. And I think that that really probably was one of the main driving factors of what was happening in the healing revivals.
It could be. You know, I wish that we had actual recordings and transcripts of every single person that was involved with both the Voice of Healing and the Latter Rain, because if you have them all and you put them together chronologically, you start to see the shifts in doctrine. We can see it clearly with William Branham. When William Branham opened this thing in 1948 to become basically the leader of it, has his mental breakdown, Oral Roberts steps in, William Branham comes back, and during those times, you can see from the limited number of recordings that we have during that time that his doctrine was really dumbed down. He didn't really get into, like you said, the cultic things during that time. And interestingly, a lot of his recordings are missing from that time. There's a period of time, which we'll get into this later, but there's an implosion that happens, and William Branham separates himself from this for a brief period of time. During that, he's like a train off the rails, man. He's starting to bring in the manifested sons of God doctrines and some of the more heretical things. Then Voice of Healing takes him back for a brief period of time, and you watch his sermons again. They start to be dumbed down, and he's preaching the Trinity more often, for example. Then, completely separated from William Branham, the two part ways, Gordon Lindsay and William Branham are no more, and that's when William Branham literally goes insane and off the rails. So we have this chronology of William Branham's sermons doing this. Well, we also have a lot of sermons from Jim Jones, and you can see Jones, even during this time, his sermons weren't that, if you were to listen to it, you would think, well, that's not really that bad, until he starts to separate from this movement. He starts also teaching William Branham's manifested Son of God doctrine, and that's when Jones goes off the rails. So this framework that was being created, although in my opinion it was a very bad thing that they were doing, it also had some, at least some structure for maintaining some sort of doctrinal position that wasn't destructive while they could contain it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense to me, because the healing revival side is, while they have their excesses and their problems, it is a much healthier environment ultimately than what the Latter Rain side of things turns into. The healing revival side, since they're designed and their goal is broad appeal, they end up being more open, right, less rigid, less controlling of people, and it evolves into, you know, what you see with Oral Roberts, right? I mean, Oral Roberts goes out, he makes Oral Roberts University, right? He's bringing in all kinds of people from all kinds of places, right? The people who focus more on the healing revival side of things, they ended up being a lot more open, I would say, as they come out of this thing. Whereas the people on the Latter Rain side, and are more, the more influenced you are by the Latter Rain, the more you end up this way, you come out of this thing closed and rigid and more authoritarian, right? So that, it kind of depends on where you are in the spectrum, right? How much of the Latter Rain influenced you coming out of this thing, as really relates to how cultic, how authoritarian, how controlling.
So you know how it ended with these people, but I hope you heard all the heresies that were introduced by Branham, who eventually, ultimately, ended up losing his mind at the end of his life. And then Jim Jones, who was running around doing conferences and conventions, and he was preaching to the masses. People were flocking to these people to hear these heresies, and we know how Jim Jones ended, what was lying dormant inside of him. And then we have people carrying the torch today in the same manner. It's like they took these doctrines and tried to create other doctrines. When you talk about Charles Parham and the books back in the early 1900s and the expositories and the concordances and the glossaries and all of these books that they wrote giving their opinion of the word of Yah, this is what you call Christianity. And now you've got either replacement theology, again, with Caucasian Christian believing people, or Caucasian Christian people inseminating themselves. I know a Caucasian preacher who's preaching to black people, telling them they're Israelites, but he's Irish, and he inserted himself as an Israelite too, so he's bringing back British Israelism. You know, the word was given to the Israelites to teach. We were the original priests. We were supposed to teach this world and all the other nations and races the covenant and the commandments and the statutes and laws. This thing has gotten way out of control.
And when these other nations try and teach and preach us as they set up all these schools, these seminaries and all that, it's off. I've always told people that, like, this is such a natural gift that we've had in creating blues and jazz and rock and roll, that we didn't need music or to go to school for. It was a gift given from God. And then along comes the other races, breaking it down into a science, putting it into music, studying time signatures and notes, and then telling us we need to learn that way when it's something given to us naturally, and we didn't need that because it was a divine inspiration, vibration, frequency that we tapped into because the living Most High Yah breathed into us the Ruach that connects us to heavenly places. I rest. Let's continue to hear the rest of this. I'm still listening to these gentlemen and trying to process a lot of, I guess I should say, what we've experienced, what we've gone through as a people within the Christian church and all of the dogma.
Think that you are. And again, it goes a lot to those doctrinal statement of faith policies that William Branham and his team issued because they were less open about those things in the broader healing revivals. It was really only when there was the latter rain crowds that they go into this area that's eventually going to produce the things that we call the message. And I think also that's kind of why when things break up, like in my sect of the message, John, even though the healing revivals is what made William Branham so popular, we would say the healing revivals and those other healing revivalists, we had nothing good to say about them. I mean, we thought really poorly of them, and a lot of us would say, well, they were just after money or they were just after fame or popularity, right? But and the reason we said that is because that's what William Branham told us about them after he separated from them. Yeah. All right, but the thing was, he was the chief among them. Was chief among them.
I mean, think about this. You know, for somebody who is never, ever involved, I was raised in this thing, so my way of thinking is a certain way. For people who weren't, it's difficult to understand. But in parallel, this, you know, William Branham was white supremacist through and through, and the white supremacists absolutely hated the Catholic Church. Hated the Catholic Church. And there are a lot of men who were influenced by the white supremacists, and they also hate the Catholic Church today. I've learned that this is a common thing. It's not just William Branham. But take the Catholic Church as a parallel example to put it into a different perspective. In the same structure in the Catholic Church, William Branham would have been the Pope. He was creating this new anti-Catholic church, of which he was maybe not in full authoritarian control, but like the Pope, had a subset of men who organized with him and made decisions, just like the Catholic Church. And picture in the Catholic Church, if all of these men who were under the Pope suddenly realized, hey, there's a white supremacist, and he's evil, and he's got all of these, he's got all this really shady, dark background, and he's starting to say things that are not quite in alignment with the Bible, and they're fundamental to him. We need to vote this guy out. And that's what happened on the Voice of Healing side. And then the Pope leaves, gathers a...
I hope you're hearing this. He's breaking it down for you what literally happened. People found out that Branham had racist ties to the Ku Klux Klan. And he's giving you an analogy if this was the Pope. Listen, Esau is not to be trusted or to be leading us. This is Esau telling on Esau. They'll expose each other in a heartbeat.
A group of people creates this destructive cult and says, all of these guys that I used to be working with, by the way, are the devil. They're all evil people. In parallel, it makes no sense. I mean, you look at this and you laugh. You think, well, this, you know, that just sounds absurd. But in the real world of actuality, this is exactly what happened with William Branham.
Yeah. He is. This thing breaks down. We're going to have to do multiple full episodes on this thing. As this thing breaks down, he decides that all the denominations are evil. Why? Because he don't want his people going back to the denominations. He wants to keep them out with him. He decides all the other healing evangelists were evil. Why? Because he don't want his people going back with the other healing evangelists. He starts erecting systems to keep his most loyal followers loyal and to not go here. This is like starts of information control, John, and all kinds of thought control, right? To keep them away from going back and hearing the truth about what had happened and why he got kicked out of all of this stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, so as the healing revivalists, they generally ended up less cultic than the Message or the Latter Rain group. But there are two really important doctrines that spring up in the healing revival on that side of things. So they're somewhat Latter Rain influence, but they're more on the healing revival side of things than the Latter Rain side of things. And they are the prosperity gospel and the word of faith and the word of faith movement. And those things were both birthed in the healing revivals. They're two related ideologies, but they're different ideologies. And if you kind of trace those out, I think...
Now, I'm really interested to see where this is going to go, because we had Carlton Pearson keeping the Azusa Street revivals going, coming from under Oral Roberts. But then when we move into the Word of Faith movement, you have Kenneth Hagin, who inspired Price down in Los Angeles with his Faith Dome. And then that kind of spun off into Copeland with his little protege, Creflo Dollar, which is a made-up name, a stage name as well.
I want to talk just a little bit about how they arose within the healing revival here. But if you trace them all the way back, the prosperity, gospel, and word of faith ideas, you'd have to go all the way back to the mid-1800s. And back in the mid-1800s, there was a movement called New Thought, and there's a man, I got a picture of him here, Phineas Quimby. He's probably the father of New Thought. And this is not a Christian movement at all. They don't even claim to be Christian, right? It's a pseudoscience is really what it is. And this is where the initial concepts of some of this stuff develop. And a lot of people called it Quimbyism, and some of it turned into what's called Christian Science today. And in the later 1800s, quite a few ministers associated primarily in the British Israel movement, they begin to adopt some of these Quimbyism ideas, right? John Alexander Dowie, Russell Kelso Carter, A.B. Simpson. These people are taking some ideas that come out of New Thought, out of Quimbyism, and they start adapting them. And as they do that within their movement, they create an early version of positive confession, right? So positive confession actually primarily grew out of British Israelite ministers who had been impacted by Quimbyism or believed in some of the stuff of Quimbyism. And so that is where positive confession takes form in the late 1800s. And the way they do that is they integrate it with Christian thought. They go back to the atonement, and they say there's a dual atonement. They invent the theology of dual atonement, John. And you talked about this before, where they believe that you're saved by faith and you're healed by faith, and Jesus Christ purchased both on the cross. Therefore, since you can be saved merely by believing on Christ instantly, you should be able to be instantly healed merely by believing on Christ, and it's a package deal, right? And so they start really tying divine healing to salvation very closely. And this is part of the theological rationale for positive confession.
See, this is the theology we're still dealing with today with those who come into the knowledge of the truth and start keeping the commandments and laws. It's hard to peel the layers of Christianity off these people. And we're seeing how tainted it really is, the heretical concept and foundation of it all. And so there's still people that will go around teaching, mostly Esau, that you're not saved by works, you're saved by faith. But they negate all of the book of James that says that, show me your faith, I'll show you my works. You must do the work. And we know we must go and make disciples, encourage, exhort, convert our people. We must be converted. We've got to show our people their transgressions, lift our voice like a trumpet of Zion. I mean, the work, you know, was to store treasures in heaven. You must do what Matthew 6 says, give in secret, pray in secret. And we see that also in Matthew's, that Christ told the man, he told the sheep that when you fed the hungry, when you clothed the naked, when you, you know, gave shelter to those who didn't have shelter, you did it unto me. That's works.
He said, when you were doing these things you did unto me, enter thou into my rest. So this is the difficulty we have in stripping our people. This is why I have a hard time with Christian Pentecostal pastors coming into the truth and want to stay on the same level and not sit down and be retaught, because you can't get the layers off of them of their Pentecostalism. They're all great actors, these pastors and preachers and teachers. They try to walk with an aura of I'm anointed and I just had breakfast with God. And they talk that way and they come off that way. Then they start to find the truth and they don't want to sit down and be retaught and realize they've been taught lies. You don't need to be teaching, because you're incorporating the lies with the truth. It's a mess. And so this is what we have to deal with, because I'm thinking about a conversation I recently had with somebody saying, but you're saved by faith and all you have to do is confess. And no. Peter was not converted for 3.5 years. He walked with the Messiah and was not converted. Even walked on water and was not converted. Even tasted the Holy Spirit when he blew on the 70 and sent them out and was not converted. Psalms 19:7, the law of the Elohim is perfect, converting the soul of man, and the testimony of the Mashiach, making wise the simple. Let's continue.
And that, again, develops primarily among British Israel ministers in the late 1800s. And so we know how that gets down to William Brown, right? It comes through F.F. Bosworth, who was there with Dowie and the other British Israelite ministers. John Lake got it from Dowie, British Israelite as well. Gordon Lindsay got it directly in that line as well from John Lake. And these things pass down to William Branham and into these healing revivals, and they're preaching positive confession, I think, as we've demonstrated multiple times, all through these healing revivals as part of their training material in their seminary that they're running. And what happens is positive confession eventually births word of faith,
right,
and the prosperity gospel.
Okay, before I talk about that, positive confession was the phrase I was looking for, because that went into name it and claim it, blab it and grab it and everything else, and it went into the word of faith. It started as positive confession. But the thing is that British Israelism was perpetuating white supremacy Christianity, which started when in the 1600s when we got off the slave ships and when we forced the indigenous, who were already here. I do believe in that as well. I don't just buy into the 1619 transatlantic slave trade that said that's when we first got here. No, because I understand 2 Esdras 13:30 through that says that the 10 lost tribes, even Columbus knew this, landed in Arsarif. They left the Syrian captivity early on, way before the time of Christ, which is why he traveled to the dispersed. But that's something else. So we have these people with their British Israelism perpetrating the white supremacy gospel in the 1900s that started in the 1600s. They kept that thing going, 1670, 18, 1900s. One of the greatest gospel black preachers of the time, G.T. Haywood, used to associate with these guys. But the Ku Klux Klan and some of these pastors and preachers wanted to hang him after a service one day. And how many of you know where Sunday picnics came from? After church, on Sundays, the wrong worship day, white supremacists would come out the church and be ready to have a town meeting and figure out which Negro they were going to hang. And these people you want to sit next to, they still want to come follow with us. Even you Israelites having our high holy days and telling all these other people to come, you know, and fellowship with us, and they're not even of the circumcision, don't want to be of the circumcision. They want to make themselves co-equal, want to say they are our nation when you can never be our nation. You can keep these commandments and be grafted in by, you can be a stranger sojourning with us. But to get into that kingdom, there's 12 gates that those 12 tribes are going to march through. And when Zechariah in the book of Amos talks about how in the Feast of Tabernacles during the new millennium, that the other nations will have to come into Jerusalem because they'll be on the outside, and that if they don't come to Jerusalem to worship during the Feast of Tabernacles, they'll have no rain the following year. That implies that you will not be in Jerusalem, in the inner city, in the kingdom. You will have made it, thanks be to the Most High, to the millennium, which that you should be grateful for, because Amos 9 and 14 tells us only a remnant will make it and we shall possess them. I digress.
And this healing revival movement. And John, to the best of my knowledge, maybe you know better, A.A. Allen was the first one to preach the full-on prosperity gospel here in the healing revival. And what he did is he took the positive confession beyond just health, and he also started applying it to wealth. Okay.
Right.
So A. Allen starts preaching health and wealth positive confession, which is prosperity gospel.
Yeah.
And Oral Roberts picks up a flavor of this. He really likes that. And this is how the prosperity gospel is born. And of course, the prosperity gospel is pretty popular today in a lot of
circles. Did not know that.
Positive confession births prosperity gospel during the healing revival.
My opinion is slightly different. Again, I've mentioned this a few times, but the message cult, as we know it, was not a religious cult. It was a political cult that was disguised as a religious cult. And it could be argued that during the days of Voice of Healing, when William Branham became the Pope of this thing, that it tried mainly to transition to a religious cult, but underneath, the framework was still a political cult. And off to the side, I'm picturing Davis getting angry because here's William Branham, who's becoming much, much bigger than Davis globally, and he's got this ego, and, you know, it becomes this thing that Davis can no longer control. But at the bottom, at the, you know, the foundation of this thing, it was a political cult. And people make the mistake. I think this is probably why historians struggle to understand this. They make the mistake of looking at specific doctrines as the religious foundation, assuming that the Bible or their perception of the Bible is the core philosophy of this movement, which isn't the case. If I look back at John Alexander Dowie, as he was growing into his multi-million dollar status, hundreds of millions, he also was preaching elements of the prosperity gospel. Dowie was also deeply, deeply into Christian mysticism.
Yeah, Dowie was a Zion movement. He was into Christian mysticism. And
stages through different
hundreds of millions of dollars in the 1900s. Look him up, Dowie.
I'm going to fast forward for the sake of time because I see how much time they have left. Let's go.
Level of something, and that gives us the power to be like Jesus and speak things into existence. So while they are similar in their outcome, the ideology behind it on the back end is substantially different, and they derive through different sources. And so I think that's important, I think, for our listeners to make sure they understand that. Otherwise, you can get confused as you try to unravel this stuff.
I think that's a really good way to explain it. Because, I mean, think of this. If you take Roy E. Davis, William Branham's mentor, away from the equation, then you take away the spiritualism that influenced William Branham. Davis was deeply into spiritualism. That's how he held his revivals. He had the stage act of being a converted spiritualist. That influenced Branham. So if you take spiritualism away from Branham, you've taken away the seed of spiritualism that grew into the manifested sons of God and into some of these other movements. Then if you take William Branham's manifested sons of God theology out of this movement, word of faith can't exist. The prosperity gospel can still exist, but it takes a much, much different form. But if William Branham would have remained in his catatonic mental health state, whatever happened to him, and you took him out of this healing revival, then you take the manifested sons of God away, you take some of these other things that he introduced into the movement away, and all of it doesn't exist. You've got no Voice of Healing. You've got nothing without Branham. So all of these seeds growing and combining and merging, none of which, Charles, not one of which are actually Christian. None of these things are Christian, but all of these elements are what created something that heavily, deeply influenced American Christianity.
Right, and none of these things are original to William Branham, right? None of these things are original to William Branham. They're all pre-existing ideas, and in the context of the healing revival and in the context of the latter rain, these pre-existing ideologies are being tweaked, they're being modified, and they're being reformulated a bit, right? So positive confession in the healing revival reformulates into prosperity gospel, and it reformulates into word of faith by merging in some manifested sons of God pieces. And William Branham is the man with the stick stirring the pot. While all this, as all of these ingredients are going, William Branham is the pot, is the one stirring the pot.
The witch's brew.
So the Word of Faith theology and the Prosperity Gospel, they're born at roughly the same time. William Branham is at the center of this, without a doubt. He's at the center of this. Now, here's the thing. William Branham did not like the Prosperity Gospel. And I think more than anything, he didn't like the title of it, honestly. Yeah. I think he didn't like the word prosperity in it. But he believed 90% of the Prosperity Gospel. But he wholeheartedly believed Word of Faith. He preached Word of Faith. I mean, he wholeheartedly believed Word of Faith. And honestly, it's hard to tell exactly, but we can be quite certain that really T.L. Osborne and Kenneth Hagin almost certainly learned Word of Faith from William Branham. I mean, because William Branham was the conduit between them and the broader Latter Rain movement, honestly. Yeah. And William Branham himself was involved in Latter Rain as these things were as Word of Faith or Manifested Sons of God was coming together. Let me just read a few quotes, John, just of William Branham on Word of Faith. That way maybe our listeners can pick up what he's preaching here. This is from a sermon called Expectation. William Branham says, "Now that same spoken word of God, the Holy Spirit, can make any promise of God manifest if you'll just believe it." Right. William Branham didn't so much use Word of Faith, but he tended to call it spoken word is usually what he used instead of Word of Faith. Here's another quote. He says, "If God's eternal spoken word by born-again people by prayer, asking God, and God's obligated to his word, when that real, not put on, not make-believe, but a settled faith is in a man's heart that don't vary from God's word a bit, it's God's word being spoken by mortal lips, and that is the faith that was once delivered unto the saints." That's from a sermon, "The Faith Delivered Once Unto the Saints." And let me give you one more. This is from another sermon, Confirmation and Evidence. William Branham says, "And I said, to think that God who made the universe, the God who made the solar system, who made the heavens and the earth and created them by his spoken word. Remember, a word is a thought expressed. God thought it, then he expressed it. It has to happen. For the world was framed by the word of God, and things were made out of things that do not appear. It was God's word. He thought it, and he spoke it, and it has to come to pass. It's a seed that's growing, and marvelously that has to bring forth in its season. And we can take his word, and we can see he promised in the last days that he'd draw this people out, and we would do the very same thing he did." Okay, so William Branham is teaching word of faith concepts, but he tended to call it spoken word. That tended to be the phrase that he used for it. And he's preaching all of these things before Kenneth Hagin did, before T.L. Osborne did, for sure. And whether they learned it from him or some other Latter Rain preacher, I think the most likely thing is they learned it from him because they were listening to him the most. And what William Branham is doing with quotes like this is he's teaching people the idea that they're going to be able to speak things into existence, just like God could speak things into existence. And I know the way I understood it personally in the message, John.
You see where this stuff comes from that still exists today that produced the book The Secret and Manifest Destiny and all that stuff, and people look at this stuff and trying to speak homes to existence. And this makes me think of Isaiah, the 14th chapter. I'm sorry. Satan said he would creep into the churches. He said, "I'll be worshipped." And he brought in spiritualism, mysticism, Eastern religions, all these philosophies that are not of the Most High. This is ridiculous. That's covetousness and idolatry being introduced.
You can add what you think, but the way I understood it personally is that it wasn't my own power to speak something into existence, but God would inspire me to say his word, and then God would bring his word to pass. And
right.
It's kind of along that line that it was supposed to work. And
these guys are trying to justify the fact that they were deeply entrenched in this matter. And now they're heartbroken to find out the truth.
Very clearly, speak to the rock. You know, he's got all of these sermons and themes, and like you said, this long predated Kenneth Hagin. And Hagin was a big part of this movement too. He's a voice of healing revivalist. Dale Osborne also was one of the editors for this thing. So these guys were deeply embedded. They heard it. Now, you can argue that they're the ones who made it popular. William Branham never focused on this in the way in which they focused on it, because he's like this sponge of all kinds of doctrine, and where you squeeze the sponge and what you get out of the sponge happens to be different from, you know, revival to revival. But it's part of the sponge that they absorbed, and then they're basically a sponge absorbing William Branham, and squeeze them and you've got Word of Faith. But these men are teaching this thing, and I think the way that it forms differently in the minds of children who are raised in it, but in the way in which I believed it, which was solely based on William Branham, he's got all of these statements and doctrines about ye are gods, and he would, you know, he's clearly referencing the framework that Kenneth Hagin uses later, but he's basically telling us that we are gods and we have the power to speak, and he's referencing all of these passages in the Bible about you.
Can't help but notice the similarities to British Israelism, We Are Gods, and One West, and the reincarnation stuff. A lot of similarities here, people. That's all I'm going to say.
Mountains. But he says, he ties it to Word of Faith. He says you have to speak to do it. And so I'm just one of many children that did this. I know others that did. We'd go around speaking things, trying to be sorcerers, you know. We thought we had this power to do things with our minds. And in no way, shape, or form did it resemble Christianity, but that's what he's telling us is Christianity.
Yeah, you know, what makes, again, Word of Faith is the rationale behind how it works. Because you can change the rationale behind it and end up with a prosperity gospel instead. But Word of Faith works because you believe you're becoming little gods, right? William Branham said little messiahs. That's how he phrased it. Messiah ets is how William Branham called it. This is how it works. We're becoming little Jesuses, little messiahs, right? Which is different than the rationale behind how the prosperity gospel works. And here's a quote. I've got another quote. This is from William Branham's sermon, The Messiah. This is a pure manifested Sons of God sermon, John. But he says, man, what is he? He's got a hand like God, got eyes like God, got ears like God, got a body like God. He's fashioned after God. He's given an earth and a dominion. He was made God over the earth to rule the earth, a lesser God. God rules the universe and everything, but man was given the earth to rule the earth. He was a Messiah et, and that's when he introduces the little Messiah, the Messiah et stuff. And, you know, William Branham gave very lengthy explanations about just what all this means and how it works. And in that 1961 sermon I just quoted again, that is pure manifested Sons of God, latter rain ideology that William Branham is preaching. Even though in the message most people, that's what he's preaching, that is latter rain manifested Sons of God ideology that he picked up and helped formulate in the latter rain side of things. And he preaches this in the later years. Now, Kenneth Hagin and T.L. Osborne, I should say rather, T.L. Osborne stayed connected to William Branham all the way up, even through the insane years, John. T.L. Osborne was one of the men who officiated William Branham's funeral.
Right.
Okay. He stayed with him all the way to the end, right? And so did the most radical of them stayed with him all the way to the end as he jumps off the deep end with a lot of these crazy ideas. And again, like we talked about in our Manifested Sons of God, what really matters here is what you mean when you say be like Jesus. But I'm pretty confident. You know, what William Branham is talking about when he says that we're all going to be little messiahs is something kind of dangerous and toxic, right?
Yeah.
A humble person, they hear, let's be like Jesus, and they think, well, let's be kind like Jesus. Let's love like Jesus, right? But a lot of people come to this from the angle of pride and of ego, and when they hear be like Jesus, they hear power, authority, control, right?
Yeah.
And work ideas can take you to a dark place, right? And it has, I'm afraid, for quite a few people when they come at it at the wrong, when they come at it at the angle that a lot of people tend to.
Yeah. A lot of people are unaware how deeply these men were connected to William Branham. And not just William Branham, but in the cult that was created after William Branham and continued to grow, we have corp docs where Kenneth Hagin and T.O. Osborne are in government established entities with the William Branham sons. As late as the 80s, I can't remember the exact date, I'll pull it up for the video, but these men were deeply connected, and you know, I'm just shocked that this history has been covered up.
Right, and you know, Kenneth Hagin claims that he prophesied William Branham's death and this, that, and maybe he did, and he said he prophesied it because William Branham had went off the deep end and went crazy. But why did he stay friends with him his whole life and support his ministry and the cult after he died? I mean, what in the world?
Yeah, the one thing that I've learned about this movement is that hindsight's 20/20, and these men capitalize on the fact that the general public isn't aware that they're doing this, but after something happens, they'll say, well, I prophesied that. And it's very easy to say that you prophesied it after it happened, especially if nobody can prove that you did before it happened, right? So William Branham, I will say that they were probably prophetic in knowing that after William Branham died, he would be seen as a heretic. And so they all began severing ties after he died. But like you said, leading up to the point at which he's very much alive and about to die, these men, he was their golden goose, right? He's the one who's bringing all their money. Why would they cut him off?
I know. It's something else, right? It's something else. So, you know, I know these things can all be a little complicated to understand how these ideologies emerge, but, you know, hopefully, I guess what we're saying here will be plain and clear and help people understand how some of this stuff came together. And I know I've spent years at this point trying to painstakingly piece all of this together, John. And so this honestly is the best of my knowledge from having read all these books here behind me. Ideas from New Thought, Quimbyism in the mid-1800s were picked up by various men all associated with John Alexander Dowie. And it was in their ranks that positive confession was formulated in the late 1800s, which then took a full turn into prosperity gospel as you come into the healing revivals. And A. Allen, and F. F. Bosworth and William Branham are the bridge that those ideas came into the healing revival. And then Kenneth Hagin and T. L. Osborne took positive confession. They mixed it with the manifested sons of God ideas that William Branham was preaching as well and produced the Word of Faith theology. And William Branham is right in the middle of all of that. He is the conduit to which all of that's happening and being cooked up in the mid-1950s.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty good summary. And it is, you know, even in this episode, I don't think that we did it full justice for somebody to understand just how complex this is and how it all fits together. You really have to deeply study this, and not just for a week or 2 weeks or a month. You have to study this thing for years to understand the intricate details of how all of this is interconnected and interwoven. But at its core, William Branham is literally the thread that binds it all together.
Yeah. And now, before we wrap up this episode, there's one last thing I definitely wanted to make sure I made a point of. You know, that Voice of Healing Fellowship, it started first as just associated evangelists, but they actually really were building a full-on formal denomination, you know, as time went on. And the Full Gospel Fellowship International is the Voice of Healing denomination.
Mm-hmm.
Full Gospel Fellowship International, and they do a whole lot of church planting, certainly hundreds of churches in the United States and Canada that they plant, and other churches join into the Full Gospel Fellowship of Churches, and there are still Full Gospel churches all over the place today. If you see a church with Full Gospel in their name, there's a pretty good odds that they sprung up during the healing revival and were planted by these healing evangelists, right? And also just want to point out a few numbers, right? You know, at the start of the 1900s, there were maybe, I looked into this the other day, there were maybe 200,000 people who believed positive confession-style beliefs at about 1900, right? But by the time you get to the end of the healing revivals in the 1950s, it's no longer just about 200,000 people, mostly in the United States and Canada, but it is millions of people in dozens of countries that have adopted these positive confession, prosperity gospel, and word of faith kind of ideas. And it is these healing revivalists, inspired and led by William Branham, that spread these ideas globally, right? And then Oral Roberts and Kenneth Hagin and T.L. Osborne, men like them, they kick off televangelism. They are the original televangelists as you come into the 1960s.
Wow.
And when they do that, they take these ideas to even wider audiences, and the charismatic movement starts to emerge as you come into the late 60s and 70s, and they push all of these ideas.
And that's where you see the picture of the TV evangelist in the Illuminati card game. This is all scripted by HaShatan. But this is good information. I'm sorry I had to interrupt just to let you know that this was in the Illuminati card game.
Into the charismatic movement, that second wave of Pentecostalism as it really takes off. And through their ministries, tens of millions of people are exposed to these ideas. And Kenneth Copeland, he got his ideas from Kenneth Hagin, right? Those ideas pour into the New Apostolic Reformation today through him, just like a lot of William Branham's latter rain ideas poured into Paul Kane, and from Paul Kane to the Kansas City Prophets, and from the Kansas City Prophets to the Vineyard Movement, and to Bethel, and to all these other kinds of places that are out there today. And from Ern Baxter, they went into the Shepherding Movement, and from there out into wider Christianity as well. So these things just spread far and
wide. And the Hillsong crap that got you with the music, where you found out it was exposed on TV.
And there, if you know the history of the movement and you know the names and you know who worked together and the stuff that happened, you can trace all of these ideas all back. They converge in a nexus around William Branham. And like you said, John, if you then go back another generation, they all converge again at Alexander Dowie.
It's very clearly fully connected. I mean, it's like if you took a big pane of glass and then just shattered it with a sledgehammer, all the pieces of the glass become slightly different, but they're still, you know, originally they're part of this thing, which was basically the Voice of Healing movement and like you said, the Voice of Healing denomination, which will blow the minds of people who were in the message cult, because I'm sure you're the same way, but we were just manipulated and programmed to think that even the word denomination was satanic, and yet that's what they were doing. They were creating a denomination.
Right, and how these ideas evolved, again, maybe one last point. I keep saying one last point. This is it, I promise.
This is it.
You can tell I'm a preacher, right? I mentioned how these ideas grow, right? It's a seed that's planted. Quimbyism turns into positive confession, which turns into...
All right, that's enough talking about. I want you to hear the history, how extensive it is. And as I mentioned, Hillsong, you see all these different branches that come from Dowie and Branham, which is deeply entrenched into white supremacy associated with the Ku Klux Klan, mysticism, and spiritualism. Just misinterpreting the gospel, the doctrine. Oh, goodness. All your little... books that try to interpret the Bible for you. I forget what you call them. It just escapes my mind right now. It's not so much the concordance of Strong's. It's the, I can't recall the name, but pass this information on. Let other people hear this. Share this show far and wide and go to the William Branham Research Channel on BitChute. I hope you enjoyed and learned something. This is what we struggle with, trying to bring people up out of the grips and chains of religion and Christianity. All right. Shalom, everybody.